This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Christine Wong, and joining me virtually is...
Arvind Viraj.
So today, what is the question that we're asking throughout the show?
So we're asking, should restrictions be eased for fully vaccinated individuals? Why or why not? The options on Twitter are yes, fully lifted, yes, eased a bit, no, not yet, and no, not at all. Mm. Currently, yes, eased a bit is at 45.1%. No, not yet is at 31.6%. Yes, fully lifted at 14.9%. And no, not at all at 8.5%, which is a bit surprising. I was expecting no, not yet to get the highest vote. So that's an interesting poll. We have a couple of messages, a couple of tweets. Shamil says, can't they put the vaccination information into my card? I've seen a lot of people discussing online how to circumvent My Sejahtera checking at roadblocks and when entering shops. And there's another one from Karaoke TV who says that many frontliners, whether economic or health, not vaccinated or fully vaccinated, the security guard, the teachers, so on and so forth.
Right, I see. And we also have a couple of messages on WhatsApp as well. Let's take a look real quick. So we've got Yap Li Ling, who says, why not? Vaccinated people have lower viral load, and it's not that SOPs will be adhered to anyways. Oof, ouch. Yeah. We've also got, let's see what your name is. Oh my goodness. Karen Wong, who says, I think restrictions should not be eased for fully vaccinated persons, as they can still carry the virus and infect others. Until almost everyone has had their first dose, we can review again, especially children. We have to protect them as they are our future. We've also got Maggie Benz. Hi, Maggie. Who says, no, shouldn't relax individual SOPs even when fully vaccinated because these individuals may be carriers of the virus and infect those who are not. We should see the bigger picture. We've got a couple of responses on Instagram as well where we also have a poll running with just yes or no options. And it's very close. Yes is at 52% and no is at 48%. Mm-hmm. And we have quite a few responses here. So I'll just read out a couple. JHWE9 says it creates unnecessary tension, but it's to keep everyone safe. Afifa says yes, because we need to adapt with this pandemic. Until when do we need to be like this? Ashvin I. Macy says vaccinations are meant to get us back to living normally. Roberto Caleja says because they've done their part, those unvaccinated need to feel the consequences. June underscore Young says they could be a carrier and spread to those who are not vaccinated. Chi Wei Chen agrees, says increases risk for those not yet vaccinated. Anis FH Maya says too early for laxity. Just how many have completed their second dose and why is that a priority now? Esme San Law says so that people won't die from hunger and or mental health issues before COVID-19. Cal NJH says vaccinated does not mean we won't get the virus, just a prevention from death, am I right? And Ruma 74 says only for economic purposes, not for social, kids are still vulnerable. So there's opinions all around the shop, really. I think it's interesting that it seems to be pretty split down the middle here.
It's split down the middle and everyone has a point. So everyone makes a good point and there's stuff to consider on both sides.
Speaking of stuff to consider on both sides, we're looking at our second story, which I think has also its fair share of pros and cons.
Yeah, so this is not specifically about us, it's more about Singapore. So a new law was passed in Singapore on July 6th that introduces digital birth and death certificates. It also means that these digital certificates will be made available for parents and next of kin to download. So Minister of State for Home Affairs, Mohammad Faisal Ibrahim, told Parliament that they are basically doing away with over-the-counter death registrations. And they hope that it will save the Public and Immigration and Checkpoints Authority, or the ICA, about 18,000 hours a year of work time. So according to Straits Times, the new law replaces the Registration of Births and Deaths Act enacted in 1937, which makes it compulsory to report every birth, death and stillbirth in Singapore, including under special circumstances, such as on a flight bound for Singapore. So parents of newborns will be given 42 days to register their child's birth instead of the current 14 days as part of the new law passed on July 6th that also makes it mandatory for all births, deaths and stillbirths in Singapore to be reported to the authorities. The new law will also streamline the reporting and registration process for births and deaths. So deaths that take place in hospitals will be certified online by doctors and registered automatically. For the ones that take place at home, a relative who is present must report the death to a medical practitioner who will certify the cause of death online. In either case, it says that a relative will no longer need to bring the certificate to a registration center to register the death, but it will be done automatically online. So when this law kicks in, and this is the interesting part, it says that births that that happen outside of a hospital will need to be reported to the ICA as soon as possible. Mm. And the new law also grants the Registrar General of Births and Deaths the power to register a birth in those responsible for child do not do so, if they do not do so, or if they do not provide complete particulars and are uncontactable. So in registering such birth, the Registrar General will have or will give the child an identifier or a single word name. And then an application can be made to change the name within 7 years after the child's birth. So Prof. Faishal said that it ensures that every child is given a legal identity and his or her presence is made known to other government agencies to allow for government intervention or support if necessary. So mm-hmm. all this is interesting, but the reason we wanted to focus on this is not because of the law or the rules and the regulations itself, but because of the data security and privacy that's associated with such a big move or such a big shift towards this new law, right? Mm-hmm. So moving forward, like many countries will try to implement similar structures to cut down on paper or just to streamline the entire process to make it easy for their different departments. And this also applies to businesses and even apps that we use today, like locally, like MySejahtera, all of which collect and store data to, you know, just to provide more efficient service to the end user, right? Mm. It's also interesting to note that a 2020 UNISYS Security Index reveals that Singapore holds the highest level of concern about security issues among the 9 developed countries included in the survey. And then there's also a lingering distrust in state-run digital solutions due to contact tracing apps. So experts believe that it is critical to explore the potential privacy concerns that could arise from digital birth certificates. So all that aside, and on that note, we got in touch with Alvin Toh, who's the co-founder of Straits Interactive, which is a PDPA protection and risk management company, to talk about what this shift in the law means for digital privacy and security. So Alvin, thanks for staying on the line. And we wanted to start by asking you, what are your overall thoughts on the idea of digital citizenship in Singapore?
Okay, you're asking about the digital birth certificate phenomenon that's expected to hit Singapore and the related concerns. So let's look at it in context. In Singapore, there are a few things happening on the digital side. First, of course, you're referring to the digital birth certificate law that's passed to streamline registration of birth and death and a shift to digital certificates. And ICA apparently will be making backups of digital registrations of at secured sites. It will not keep paper records of birth and death registrations done digitally. Deaths have taken place in hospitals be certified online by doctor and registered automatically. Digital birth and death certificates will also be made available for parents and next of kin to download. Okay. Now, other digital certificates are, for example, at the SingPass, right? And that has now become the go-to for all identification for government services. And then the most recent is the digital vaccination certificate, or the vaccination passport, right? So that can have major impact going forward as part also of your identity, right? Especially both locally at events and eventually also travel. Now, Singapore as a hub of international commerce, tourism, data telecommunication, finance, biomedical, it benefits from having an efficient infrastructure to benefit the citizens and the global ecosystems it plugs into. So while the older generation might find it uncomfortable initially, it is a new way of doing things and it can be mitigated by a hybrid approach, right? Deploying the saving in resources from traditional to digital to deploying them to the front end to have better human touch to assist a better experience, right? And that's happening also like in the COVID experience. The younger generation whom we are growing up with, they live in a more fluid and mobile workforce and a global economy, and they benefit from the efficiency of the digitalized government services. You can already see the benefit of such government services in the use of SingPass, for example, in transactions and registration of services, which previously would have required multiple forms and identification to be submitted. And now it's just a mobile phone to log in instantly. Now, the evolution of the COVID-19 vaccination and contact tracing is another data point that will be integral part of the residents movement in Singapore to enable a safer, social environment, right, even as we experience endemic COVID situation.
Right. And Alvin, what kind of infrastructure would need to be in place to ensure data privacy is never compromised?
Okay, it's going to be hard to answer, never compromise. But let's separate data privacy and data security. You might have a secure infrastructure and you still could have data privacy compromise. The two sound the same, but they are not. Okay. Many companies in Singapore may have data security practices but lack robust data privacy governance. Example, you may have collected data with all the new digital platforms you have deployed in the last 2 years to transform your business digitally to survive. But you may not have put in the practices to ensure how you collect, use, disclose, or store personal data in accordance with the Personal Data Protection Act. Just because you have the data and can access it doesn't mean you can use it for other purposes or sharing to other parties. These are governed under the PDPA, which firms may not realize. PDPC itself has advocated for firms to have a robust data protection management program. IMDA advocates the Data Protection Trustmark, where firms subject themselves to external audit according to four principles of sound data protection practices and then be awarded with a recognized trustmark that's backed by the IMDA. Now, others who operate regionally can aspire to attain ISO certifications for their firms in data protection, notably the ISO 27701. So that is how you want to guard against companies having better able to protect personal data by having recognized data protection management program, best if they are adhering to certain standards they are recognized and being audited by third parties.
Right, well, Alvin, just stay on the line with us. We're going to go to a quick break now with It's the Same Old Song by The Four Tops. We're asking you the question, should restrictions be eased for fully vaccinated individuals? Why or why not? You can get in touch with us on Twitter or Instagram at BFM Radio and also on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. But for now, here's a short break and then we'll be right back with Alvin Toh.
Burden-free Malaysia. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Christine Wong and joining me virtually is...
Arvind Viraj.
Right now, we're speaking about digital birth certificates and death certificates and such, specifically pertaining to Singapore. And we have Alvin Toh, co-founder of Straits Interactive, which is a PDPA data protection and risk management company, to talk about what this shift in law means for digital privacy and security. So Alvin, in the event of a data breach, what kinds of data would be the most damaging if it fell into the wrong hands? And is enough being done to protect that data?
Well, let's look at what kind of data. Personal identifiable data that are more permanent, like IC, health data, are more susceptible to be used for identity theft, right? People are able to impersonate and use identity to create accounts, right, for financial transactions or for other nefarious means, right? But those kind of data are used as data to confirm your identity, right? Health information. Another one, it can be abused for extortion, smear campaigns, or even manipulation. Okay, so this was a case in point where we've seen, you know, the recent hacks into the health databases. And this is something is on the rise. Financial information, credit card obviously, right, can result in financial losses. Now, in the dark web, okay, to give a contrast, financial data, for example, like a credit card, are worth 50 cents each. Permanent data I mentioned just now, like health data, your IC, are worth $4. So they're maybe 6 to 8 times more, right? Because those are hard to change and they actually are used really for authentication, right? So that's something with more of these kind of data in your hands as a company, the more responsibility and accountability you have. And that's why recently, the PDPA, right, had an amendment of a new obligation called the Data Breach Notification Obligation to the existing 9. And we have seen a rise in data breaches. Now, needs to be mitigated more quickly and effectively through robust internal handling and also timely reporting to parties concerned to limit harm. And that's the principle of good data protection practice, to limit harm when there's a breach happening. Right, that's both internal investigation, also timely reporting to stakeholders or affected customers. Right, so that's something that right now we are seeing some companies or many companies are still lacking a robust incident handling or crisis management practice.
Mm-hmm. Alvin, are enough people aware of their digital privacy rights, and where can they learn about these rights?
Well, PDPC conducted a survey years back, and the percentages aren't encouraging, isn't the majority, especially for firms handling personal data. Now, in the public space, there's been a lot of campaigns, even on TV, in the newspapers, mainstream, there have been even comic strips on it. And right now, the rights of the individual in personal data is becoming more and more apparent, especially now also with the trust mark being advertised. Now, you can draw the parallel, I guess, between the current vaccine situation and privacy, right? You see, right now, we're facing the emergency in this area where even news daily of the COVID cases, some people still have a notion that it's not going to impact them, or they don't really care for any of the measures, or perhaps even unfounded fears of the vaccine, right? So just scaring people along the way isn't the way, right? Just look at how we are doing right now, this year versus last year. Now there is a clear goalpost of getting 70% vaccinated. That's made known, okay? And therefore, there's an aggressive outreach, and ministers are even doing videos in dialects to reach the seniors and the vulnerable, right? People are also calling on these people directly in outreach programs. So that is something perhaps that needs to be done on a more aggressive manner. We're talking about privacy rights or data protection rights, right? On the benefit side, if you look at, again, the contrast, in COVID, if you are vaccinated, you can gather in larger groups, you can attend larger events, right? Perhaps even traveling. Such differentiation may help equally in the privacy space, where firms who are demonstrably accountable can be accorded more benefits, right, in terms of the kind of services they extend. Okay, so for resources wise, in terms of public, they can go to the regulator website, the PDBC, or the IMDA websites, where they have regular guidelines, enforcement cases, and a listing of providers. Now, on our end, we drive the largest community for compliance professionals, which benefit the businesses and individuals in this space. And we call it a Data Protection Excellence Network, where we have weekly webinars, video summarizing cases, articles, and discussion with various aspects on operational data protection management and developments in the region, right? So this is the dpexnetwork.org, right? Data Protection Excellence Network, where we have thousands of people now in that network. And in fact, in Singapore, the data protection officer role is mandatory, which quite a number of firms still have not appointed.
Now, Alvin, while it may be controversial, isn't going digital kind of the only meaningful way moving forward? It is, you know, kinder to the environment, and future generations will be more inclined to have all the data online, right?
Balance is key. For example, now the work from home, right? People may still be comfortable with having a hybrid situation where people can go back to the office on certain days and then work digitally from home anywhere on other days. A recent report on office space take-up in the coming 12 to 18 months see Asian firms expecting more people returning to the office versus the multinational companies who have more hybrid arrangements set up probably more permanently. Okay, while digital tech and communications are now more mature, the nature of our interactions, especially in Singapore, are still quite analog preferably. So there is much benefit for dematerialization of information, i.e. moving information from physical to digital, if we want to democratize access and enhance portability, right? And that has benefited the music world, the book world, and all that, right? So just look at China, okay? They leapfrog from low telecom and poor internet infrastructure to a high penetration through mobile phone and mobile data. That digitalization benefits even a market vegetable seller who can take advantage of faster digital payment using phone and have the security and convenience of the funds being transferred immediately and kept safely. Okay. In terms of environment, you ask, there is a big debate on the kind of energy consumption, dirty versus clean. Well, let's look at the cost of consumption. The cost of the infrastructure and labor to maintain traditional way of administering data, especially personal data, is very, very costly and slow. Just look at how long the queues were and the amount of paperwork involved when we had to go in queue at ICA to renew our passport or make a new passport. Now, you know, with digitalization, it's very convenient and very quick, and you only had to do one visit versus multiple, right? And then going digital also take advantages of more technologies that are now unlocking the trapped energy, clean energy. Okay, so solar, hydro, wind, where those energy are having to be stored, more technology are taking advantages of that. So time is needed for the relevant controls to be implemented and infrastructure to be in place, for people to adjust to the changes. There is much to discuss in this space, and especially in the blockchain revolution, which has many ramifications in digitalization, right, of our services and daily lives. So that's a topic for another day. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Alvin. That was Alvin Toh, co-founder of Straits Interactive, which is a PDPA data protection and risk management services company. So like I said, the law itself doesn't apply to us. Obviously, it's in Singapore, but the concept of data security and privacy and data management, that applies to like all of us, right? Whether it's on a country level, national level, or even like on a small business level, the many, many businesses that we give our data to and how they either store it or use it or protect it, you know, from abuse.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely an interesting topic to think about moving forward as well. Mm-hmm. Now, we are asking you throughout the show, should restrictions be eased for fully vaccinated individuals? Why or why not? You can let us know on Twitter and Instagram at BFM Radio. And you can also get in touch with us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We do have a message here on WhatsApp who says, "Hi, Prabha from PJ. Vaccination is equivalent to accident or life insurance. But just because we have insurance, it does not mean we will not be killed where we'd stand in the middle of a road. Hence, vaccination keeps us safe, but does not ensure we will not be infected by new strains or will not die via some complication," which is entirely true. We, of course, will get to more of your responses and also the poll numbers after the break. But right now, here's Walking on the Sun by Smash Mouth here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.